Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and today it's my pleasure to talk with Chef Bud Cohen. Hi, Bud.
Hi, Dennis. How are you this morning?
I'm well this morning, and thank you for getting up and having a chat with me today. I'm fascinated with the sustainable food movement all over the United States, actually all over the world as we're watching this occur, and how do we get healthy food and food into our systems. Can you talk to me first, give me a little history of yourself. Back when you, how did you get interested in the culinary arts and cooking at all? When did that happen?
Well, it's funny. I started cooking in high school at a local fast food place, and pretty much when I graduated high school, didn't know what I wanted to do, started working in restaurants and hotels, things of that nature, and then after I got married, decided to go to culinary school.
Well, that's kind of, so did it impel you? Did you start to see, well, wait a minute, putting food together actually is something that excites me and I want to do? Was that the impetus for it?
Well, it's funny because when I was growing up, my grandfather used to take me out to farms and used to cook a lot and can a lot of products. My mother always cooked a lot in our family. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of bred into me, although I didn't realize it at the time when I was learning about things, that it would come back to me, you know, in this way as a passion.
I know. We never know how it's going to happen. So you went into the culinary, you went to culinary school, and then you came out and you began working as a chef. When did you begin to say, wait a minute, there's something more here? I want to carry the message out further. Tell me a little bit about the evolution of your consciousness, especially how it has to do with the local, the farm-to-table movement and that we're seeing so much today.
Right. Well, the farm-to-table movement really wasn't ever spoken about when I was in culinary school. And I just realized one day about 15 or 18, 20 years ago that I was serving excellent, you know, farm fresh produce and things to my family at home all summer through the fall. And then when it came to my professional career running the food services at a local school, I wasn't able to buy those same quality foods.
Wow. So what did you do? Did you approach the administration? Did you do, what was the evolution of that?
At that time, it started out by me cooking a meal for the board of directors at the school. One of the board of directors, well, he turned me on to a
Perfect.
Book called Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan. And at that time, there was really no way. I brought things in from home, from my local farm stand, because there was no way to get them delivered. So really, after I read Omnivore's Dilemma, that's when I really started focusing on farm-to-table.
What were some of the messages, the themes that you took out of Omnivore's Dilemma?
Well, generally, the whole Omnivore's Dilemma theory, which was based on a theory not by Michael Pollan, but by a gentleman at University of Pennsylvania, is that we do not know what to eat. We have a dilemma as human beings, as omnivores. If we were a koala bear, we would eat eucalyptus, and that is food. That would be food. There is nothing else.
That's it.
But for us, we have way too many choices, and therefore it just becomes so blurred, especially with the media and all the processed foods that are available, that basically the processed foods took over and farm fresh foods took a back seat.
Ah, and then, so you wanted to bring this. So now, take me back to that board of directors meeting. So you served this to them. Did you see on their faces, wow? I mean, tell me, what was that experience like?
Absolutely. They completely responded to the fresh and healthy offerings. I remember tomatoes is one of my favorite things, and a beautiful Pennsylvania tomato during the season. There is no comparison to the flavor of an industrially raised tomato. So that was very well accepted.
So you obviously we have to talk. One of the things that has to happen, I mean, you have to have the supply chain to be able to make it, to be able to have deliveries, but you also we need to talk about the cost factor, because to have more healthy foods come to our table, there's a different cost factor than if it's made in a big factory farm and processed and put in there. There's just a different supply chain. So how did you approach that to the board of directors to sell them as the value of this? Tell me what the story happened there.
Well, it took a long time.
Of
There was
course, yes.
no there was no supply chain, as you say. So for the first couple of years, I convinced my company and my school that it was okay for me to buy, and it was okay because my farmer had insurance and everything, but to buy small quantities of farm fresh food and bring them into school in my van. So that's what I did at the very beginning. At the same time, there was a movement in Philadelphia that I was involved with to create this supply chain, actually a not-for-profit organization called Common Market, and I was attending meetings with other people who had the same sort of ideas in mind. So it was already starting to develop into a real system. It started back further, though, if we could just backtrack a little bit.
Please, please.
Well, the whole reason that processed foods became so prevalent is a history in the United States of processed foods taking over, starting with the invention of the refrigerator. Now, in the 40s and 50s, homes in the United States did not have refrigerators. Therefore, people had to buy fresh food and cook from scratch. So, after the refrigerator was invented, and then frozen food was perfected, and TV dinners started coming out, and I'm sure you were around for all this. You
Are
remember,
you kidding?
I'm
I'm 66 this year. I remember the Amana plan. We would actually you'd buy a freezer and it would come stocked. And you'd have food, all this frozen food inside the freezer that was part of the plan.
Exactly. And that was probably the first freezer that you remember, I'm guessing. Yeah. So before that, everyone had to eat from scratch. And then the Western diseases, such, which is really what I'm fighting against here, which stems mostly from obesity, but includes high blood pressure, diabetes, high
Right.
cholesterol, and of course, things like cancer, have stemmed from eating, processed foods that are laden with fat, sugar, and salt.
Sure.
That those ingredients weren't prevalent in homes in the quantities that they are today, and hidden in every processed food practically like they are today, fat, sugar, and salt. So my grandfather, for example, used to have some molasses that he would put on some bread. Well, he wasn't eating Pop-Tarts, TV dinners, frozen meals,
Sure.
cookie cakes, what? That was their only source of sugar. And they had to seek that out because humans do naturally seek out sugar. But we got too much of it. We went overboard in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. Processed food became so prevalent that and inexpensive that people started eating way too much of it in comparison to fresh-made food, and they didn't understand and don't understand at this point
Sure.
what it's doing to our bodies.
Exactly. And there's also a component of I remember a Peter Jennings special that he ran years ago, but he talked about how high fructose corn syrup actually lights up the same areas inside the brain that cocaine lights up. So
Correct.
there's even a compelling an addictive component that we cannot see that has to do with these kinds of processed sugars.
Right. Exactly true. Fat, sugar, and salt light up those receptors. There is a book called The End of Overeating by a doctor at Duke University. And he basically writes about how we fire those endorphins when we eat things like chocolate, when we eat,
Sure.
very salty, very strong flavors, most of which are not good for us. But at this point, we don't know when to stop because our brains have changed so much that we just need more and more of those kind of things.
Wow.
Very, very interesting book. And also, the food service industry has dragged us into this dilemma, as it were, because
sure.
of the media and the media hype over Pop-Tarts and Lucky Charms. And basically
sure.
what I have found is that young children are brainwashed more or less before they even get to preschool.
Yep. In the same Peter Jennings special, Bud, they went to one of the potato chip manufacturers, and they talked about, and they actually were able to get into a marketing meeting, and they talked about the stomach share, that they actually wanted to increase, that if they could get people to eat more of a bag and change it, that they could actually increase their stomach share that they could have it. And it was an astonishing admission about that, but that's
yes.
where we were going.
Not only that, but they have scientists at these processed food plants, like the potato chip factories, have mm-hmm. isolated specific flavors so that when you bite into that potato chip that might be coated with bacon cheddar or whatever,
sure.
your taste buds are tasting just enough of each component where you don't fill up on it. And they
wow.
search for what is known in the industry as craveability, which really just drives you to eat more of that product.
Wow.
That's
extraordinary.
Well, it's very
so
tedious,
what you're...
and right now there's a movement to turn things around. Now, this has only been going on for, 50 years. Tasty
mm-hmm.
Cake just celebrated their 100th year. So let's say somewhere 70 years when it really all started to change. That's not very long, and we can still, revert back. Part of it would be if the fresh food industry would spend the amount of money on media ads that the processed food companies do. And I've seen now models of, commercials for carrots or whatever
mm-hmm.
that are, they're shooting carrots out of a carrot cannon or something, and it's landing in people's mouths, and they're all cheering for more carrots, this and that. If we spent that kind of money on carrot and lettuce and whatever, commercials, fruit commercials, that they spend on processed food, we could really turn it around quicker.
Yeah, well, I want to take you back to my childhood and bring you back up as to what we're talking about, because when I was a kid, spinach was boiled into a slimy sludge. Broccoli was cooked until it was just so soft. And I mean, I felt gag reflex when I would eat some of these. All the rest of the vegetables were fried. And I did not know, really, that spinach could taste delightful if it was raw or undercooked. I didn't know that broccoli could just explode and have a wonderful flavor with a little bit of lemon on it. These are things I did not know because I was so enmeshed in how we in the South cooked vegetables. So I'm discovering it now. Are you getting a chance to, when you have your kids and they kids at the schools, and they discover the food, to be able to get back into that, to change habits, to change ideas?
Well, it's funny, we're starting younger and younger, and I think that I've run many cooking programs and gardening programs, things of that nature, and farm education programs at the schools I've worked at, which have mostly
yes.
over the last 10 years been pre-K through 12th grade. I find
right.
that by the time you hit preschool, they're already fairly judgmental about the foods, but there is also chemicals in things like broccoli and spinach that don't agree. I believe it's the iron content, some of the mineral contents that really don't agree with the palate when kids first
oh,
taste them.
I didn't
so
know
that.
There
is a little bit of background as to why kids don't like spinach right off the bat. But I think that if you get them to garden stuff themselves and they pick it out of the ground and they taste it, get to cook with it, it really opens their minds up as to these things. Plus, nowadays, with all these cooking shows on TV and on the internet and everything, the bar for chefs has been raised tremendously, to serve explosive, delicious, foods. I'm guessing that those parts of your vocabulary were obviously not even known, in your childhood. That wasn't related. But the kids today, they see things on TV like on Top Chef or Master Chef or Hell's Kitchen.
Sure.
who knows which number of cooking shows, which are such entertainment, but it's raised the bar in restaurants and for cooks at home. Now, the other major thing that happened was parents, you know, with two working parents in the households, which began to really take root in the 60s and 70s.
Uh-huh.
That cut down the time that people produced food in the homes from scratch, and then they started buying more, you know, more processed foods. So that was kind of the other thing that tipped the scales from when you and I were younger, Dennis.
Sure. Well, you know, Bud, so where do we go? Where are you seeing this evolution? I mean, I know that you're getting a chance to go out and speak and get people and motivate people in so many different venues. What? Tell me both your message and how do we who are in your audience begin to pick up the mantle? What kind of what are you asking us to do to be able to turn this around? Because I'm seeing that people are listening more than they've ever listened, so that the audience seems more receptive. Are you getting that same thing, that same experience?
Well, it definitely starts from the top down in this case and from the bottom up in this case. Because the Obamas are such proponents, and Michelle mm-hmm. Obama with her Eat Healthy campaign, and she planted a big garden at the White House. Funny story about that. When I met the Secretary of Agriculture a couple weeks ago, I had the opportunity to ask him about the garden that he planted, which when he took office with the Obamas, he jackhammered the sidewalk outside of the USDA in Washington, D.C., to plant a garden, and he kind of chuckled. I asked him if it was still being used and what the food is for, and he said, "Yeah, no, Michelle Obama planted her garden after me, but she got all the credit." Which really, you know, it starts from the top with the USDA and the Office of the President. You know, really trying to push forward this. The USDA has made it so great for local farmers, you know, recently, with all kinds of grant money and seed money for things as small as like a walk-in refrigerator to keep their produce in the middle of winter in some rural area, you know, from grants to that, to grants for schools for chefs like me to come in and do cooking demonstrations for children who may not have, you know, who may live in so-called food deserts,
exactly.
To programs like the one I was at the other day where the USDA granted a lot of money for apples to be local apples to be processed and then sent to inner city schools in Philadelphia. So you have the top part of it, okay?
Yeah.
Then you also have chefs like myself and food service directors and people who are on the ground, you might say, who are in the, you know, in the heat of the battle serving kids who are just buying more local foods, who are menuing it, and that's where I can help people. I can help teach people where to buy local foods, how to teach their staffs to produce food from scratch again, because most cafeterias now, the food service chef, his favorite tool is a box cutter. They cut open a box of processed food, they put it in the steamer or the oven, call it a day. We have to retrain the cafeteria staffs of America to cook from scratch, and that's going on. Also,
really? That's wonderful.
And with farmers markets, I recommend that people go out and visit farmers markets and buy as much farm-to-table foods as they can directly from their local farmers, get to know their local farmers and support their local farmers, and buy as much, even at the big box stores like Walmart started selling organics. The more organic foods that we buy, the more farm-to-table foods we buy, we vote with our wallets. And we make political change with our wallets. And that's how everyday people can change it. So it's happening from both ends, but it took 70 years to get here or whatever kind of, you know, 50, 70, 100 years to get here. So it's going to take a while to revert back.
We have a chain in Texas called HEB. It's the largest food chain. You know, these are grocery stores that have. And they're, when I go through their produce section, they'll have the local farmer, they'll have a picture and a sign up there. This is done locally, and give a little bit of the story of it right above that. So they're tying the story of that this was bought locally, even though this is a big chain, and come here and buy this. I bought two beautiful tomatoes there that I would not have had. And this is in a chain store. Would not have had that opportunity, but they're thinking that way. And they're even putting their advertising that way, that we're buying local and we're bringing it to you local. So it was just very inspirational.
That is what is going on throughout the industry as well, in restaurants, grocery stores, schools, anywhere where we can get local food. We are, you know, menuing it. Like, you'll see often now on my menu at my school, the name of the farm, the exact farm or the exact town that the farm was in, where I sourced the food from. We also have pictures of the farmers up in my cafe, and then we run farm tours to these farms as well. So
terrific.
A large scale and on a small scale. We just have to be careful, though, in that just because it came directly from a farmer doesn't necessarily mean that farmer was taken care of. So personally, I like to take it to the next level and really trace the food back to the farmer. And if at all possible, buy from farmers that I know. I've been lucky enough to visit many of the large farms around here and get to know a lot of the larger farmers by running farm tours to these establishments and things of that nature. But on a local level, you can still go out. I'm sure there's plenty of farmers markets, you know, in your area.
Sure.
And local, just be aware that farmers work really hard and that you have to respect their time. And this is something
Absolutely.
That I wrote about in my book, was getting to know your partner farms. And also on my website, I have a section with partner farms. I think it's critical to get to know our farmers.
Well, both on the console will be both a link both to the book and to the website, so that people can go, and anyone that's listening can go and easily connect with that, Bud. So tell me something. I see how this can work in the smaller, in the private schools. Are you seeing the public schools? How does a PTA parent or somebody who is talking to like a big school district like we have like here in Austin or some of the others, how do you make it through to when people are so aware of budgets and they're so worried about their food budget? So how do you begin to make the inroads into the public school system rather than just the private school system?
There is infrastructure out there now to assist big school systems, and some of them have been successful already implementing farm-to-table programs, doing the same things that I'm doing except on a larger scale. Two really, really good resources are the USDA. If you go on their website, they have lots of links to farm-to-table programs and offer grant money and plans to get started. And then another organization that I'm very, very much into and have gone to their conferences and stuff is the National Farm to Table Network. And you can go on their website as well. The National Farm to Table Network, National Farm to School Network, focuses primarily on helping public school systems. There are other organizations also, like the Food Trust, which is based here in Philadelphia, and PASA, which is based here in Pennsylvania, which is the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture, that can also be a framework. Of course, anyone could reach out to me and I could direct them towards resources. My specific region is the East Coast, but there are plenty of food hubs in different cities and plenty of resources in different cities. It's just a matter of working it out. It's never been easy. It's not been easy to get these kind of foods into higher education or private schools like I've worked at, but I've also worked with charter schools in Philadelphia and lower income schools as well. So there is a lot of hope. That's, I believe, going to take a little bit more government assistance to really, really go widespread. And the assistance is there.
And that's one of the things that I love about when you can have a public-private partnership. This is where the government can incentivize differences in behaviors and then let the market grow into that. It seems like that's a natural way for us to be really to be able to have value for the dollars that we give to the government.
Yes, I agree, and I think the government is coming around to the notion that the way people eat has a huge impact on the healthcare system in this country. Really,
Amen.
what it comes down to is that yes, we may pay a little bit more for better food, on the front end, but the cost to the healthcare system on the back end, again, with diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol,
Yep.
cancer rate. A lot based on obesity and a lot because of the Western diet, which is
Sure.
high in fat and salt, can be helped by getting this fresh local food and this training for chefs and all this in the hands of the masses.
God, how wonderful. How wonderful. So where are you going from here? What are your plans? How do you look at the next part of your career, the next year, the next month? Where are you directing your efforts, bud?
Well, currently I have a full-time job, and I plan on continuing to work there,
Well, you
running the
always,
food.
yes, but still, every great innovator has always had a full-time job and then has expanded into where they're going to influence all of us. So, in addition to your full-time job, tell us all about it.
Right. Well, I have to say that the company that I work for, Culinart, and even at my full-time job has afforded me, many of these opportunities. So
Wonderful.
even though my full-time job, which is the food service director at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, comes first, I have woven into that curriculum and into my work there, many educational programs, brought farmers into the school, made other farm
Wonderful.
connections. And gone out, and at this point, I really want to take up some of the students there that I've been working with and train leaders for the future, which has also been a lot of my plan in school education all along, was that the children, our youth, are going to be the leaders of the next generation. So it's really important to try and catch them as young as possible. So that's part of my plan. On the personal side, to develop my website further, possibly write a second book, which would be Farm to Table for Homes. My first book was Farm to Table for Schools. And generally try and work with as many more people as I can get the message out to through guest speaking engagements and consulting and things of that nature.
How wonderful. Now, at the School for Osteopathic Medicine, these are you're training osteopaths, right?
Yes, they also train physician's assistants,
Right.
psychologists, and a few other
Do you
medical.
see? All right, let's just group into the medical field. Are you seeing a difference in the receptivity of the medical personnel to understanding that body-mind connection with the food that we're having that is beyond other than here? Just let me just give you a drug and send you off with the prescription.
Yeah, I think there is starting to be a change in that attitude, a more focus on nutrition.
Cool.
Nutrition, though, is a nutrition is a fairly young science compared to, say, surgery. Nutrition hasn't been around and studied that long, under a microscope. I think the first nutritionists and people that were involved with this were probably witch doctors and people who were like voodoo and had like,
Sure.
mixtures, maybe, Aztecs, Incas,
Absolutely.
Native Americans, potions and mixtures. And they were starting to understand that if you take this food and you take that food and you mix it together, that it could heal something or it could prevent something.
Sure.
But studied as a science, it's way younger than surgery or lots of the other sciences. So
Ah.
therefore, it's taking longer to take root. And also, there's so much money tied up with the pharmaceutical companies.
Sure.
Unfortunately, a lot of people feel that they don't want us to get well. So there is that big battle,
Sure.
not battle, there is the big sort of, conflict going on there. But I
Which
do
is
see it
going to
starting more.
be?
Well, let's focus on wellness instead of curing diseases. That's
Exactly.
kind of where I'm thinking of.
I love that as a direction, bud, because if we can do that and then get the little kids and begin to get them aware of that there is a parameter beyond what they're seeing just on the particular programs that they're watching, that there's something that they can think of that is beyond what they're, then you can truly make a difference. I mean, you're seeing that with the kids that you're working with.
Yes.
How cool. How cool. Well, anything else today? Anything else that's on your mind or that you want to share, or any thoughts that you want to leave us with on any action items that we who are getting more and more eager to hear your message?
Well, I would say get out there and try and make change. If you are a parent at a school, yes, approach the PTA, approach the administrators at the school, approach the food service people. There is change on the way, and also approach your politicians. Buy more local food. Buy more organic food. You're supporting change in those ways as well.
How wonderful. Well, Bud, thank you so much for talking with me today. This is it's an immense pleasure to see what you're doing, and we're on board here in Austin and with what we're going to be doing and the people we're talking to, and I know you're doing, and I look forward to getting a chance to hearing for what your adventures are along the way.
Dennis, thank you for having me on your show today. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. Take care, bud. Bye.